From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast, hosted by Paul Hanley.
You're listening to part two of our podcast with Professor Jia Qingguo. If you haven't already, I encourage you to go back and listen to part one, where Professor Jia and I discuss warming North and South Korean relations, Chinese economic leverage over North Korea, and changes in Beijing's approach to North Korea policy. Our conversation now picks up where we left off on part one, beginning with a look at the possibilities of a U.S. preemptive strike on North Korea. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the discussion.
I wanted to talk to you about the potential use of military force. There's been a lot of discussion in the United States and coming from within the administration on this issue. What do you see as the likelihood of this approach by the United States, some use of force? And how does the Chinese leadership view this?
I don't know how Chinese leaders view this, but I know that I'm very pessimistic on this issue. I think the chance for military conflict is still quite high. Not because anybody wants to have a military conflict. I don't think President Trump wants to have a nuclear conflict. Wants to have a military conflict.
Right.
Nobody wants to have any military conflict. Even Kim Jong-un does not want to have a nuclear military conflict. The problem is you don't have any good way out of this. Okay, if you allow North Korea to have nuclear weapons, what will be the next? The current imagination is that the next can be very bad. Kim Jong-un's government may use this, use the nuclear weapons to blackmail South Korea, maybe other countries. Given its past track record, this is not unimaginable. And also, this probably would be the beginning of an end of the existing international non-proliferation regime, which is also bad. In addition to this, North Korea may do things that which it did not dare to do, like proliferation. In order to get some money back. So you don't know. But you know it can be very bad.
Okay? Right.
So even though the military attack can be bad also.
Right.
when you balance, it's difficult to make a decision. Okay. I don't know. I think it depends whether the Trump administration would use force to deal with this issue. It depends on its analysis, especially its assessment of how much North Korea can, how much damage North Korea can cause South Korea
in response to
the first strike.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think if the Trump administration decides to launch a preemptive strike, the strike will not be a sort of decapitation attempt or just a target at the so-called nuclear facilities. Probably would be an all-out attack because of the alleged 10,000 artillery pieces pointing at Seoul. So this will be war. It's not a preemptive strike attack.
You know, I appreciate your response because, you know, I see the situation in very much the same ways. I often say I have a great deal of sympathy for the Trump administration because when I was in the National Security Council and was the representative to the six-party talks, in the Bush administration, we talked about potential use of force. And at the time, the military establishment, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff or Secretary of Defense would say, we have military options, but they come with huge costs. And they were then kind of moved on from. And I think the same in the Obama administration. But the Trump administration and the current Chinese leadership, now that North Korea is so close to getting this capability, they have to compare the costs of use of force with the cost of North Korea having this capability. And you've described many of those costs, including the potential to engage in commercial activity, proliferation of the capability to non-state actors, which would be extremely dangerous for not just the United States, but for the international community. And there is some assessment of some analysts, as you described, that North Korea would use this capability for offensive purposes and may, in fact, try to use it to reunify the peninsula under North Korea's terms. As you described, blackmail of South Korea, the potential to use it in that way. And if you evaluate those costs with the costs of using military force, that's a different calculation than we had to use at the time in the Bush administration. So I appreciate your answer. I think I agree.
So it's a tough decision.
Very tough decision.
Choosing between the two evils.
Exactly. And it's not a simple calculation that use of force will come with costs, therefore we can't use it.
Right.
Because it's possible that the costs to letting or having North Korea get this capability may be larger. And that's the dilemma that the administration in the United States is having to think through right now. I want to ask you about Kim Jong-un's regime. I always found when I was working on the six-party talks that my Chinese interlocutors had a good sense of what was happening in North Korea. What's your assessment of the stability and the durability of the Kim regime and Kim Jong-un's consolidation of power since becoming the leader?
I think Kim Jong-un has done a remarkable job of sustaining there. Quite unexpected by a lot of people. When he first came in, not many people felt that he could stay for a long time.
Yeah.
He was young, he had no experience, very little experience, and also the power he inherited from his, or charisma he inherited from his grandfather has
right.
been diluted so much. But he has survived, and he has done a lot of things. He appeared to be very strong.
Mm-hmm.
But things can happen.
Do you see any cracks emerging among the elites?
No, we don't know what's going on inside.
Mm-hmm.
Even the experts do not mm-hmm. know what's going on inside North Korea, because it's a country that is very closed. Very close even to China, which is
so
supposed
it's not
to
just,
have a good relationship with
it's
them.
Not just America that has a hard time figuring out what's going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, maybe you have, better access in other ways. But anyway, we don't know what's going on inside. But judging from the kind of pressures they receive because of the nuclear efforts, okay, from the international society. And also judging from the fact that, the life in North Korea has been quite difficult. Okay. Imagine if you were, working for Kim Jong-un as a senior official.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think? Would you question the policy of?
Certainly not openly.
Well, I mean, you.
But
people would question. Okay.
Yeah.
Because this is like a dead end, you know, mm-hmm. walking to a dead end. Okay. Very risky, very dangerous. Okay. So,
in that
you
kind
never know. Maybe yeah. you know. One day we wake up and then we have a different situation.
Right. In that context, do you think then that the pressure, the sanctions, the pressure, increasing pressure put on by the United States and China and South Korea and Japan, that kind of pressure and Trump's rhetoric, does that strengthen Kim Jong-un's position within North Korea? Or does that begin to cause friction within the internal dynamics in his team? Does that cause leaders, other officials within Kim Jong-un's regime to be concerned about what Kim Jong-un is doing and then begin to question his leadership?
Well, Kim Jong-un certainly wants to use it to rally people around mm-hmm. him. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. But at the same time, if people know what's going on, you know, I think some of the top some people in the top leadership, they would know. Okay, they would be very worried.
Mm-hmm.
If I were one of them, I would be very worried.
Yeah, yeah. So it's possible.
Well, you never know.
But you never know.
Yeah. Remember, you know, we did not predict a lot of things. Happened like the Soviet collapse of the True. Soviet Union, the Romanian regime.
Yes.
It was very overnight.
So it could come someday unexpected. And one of the things that you've talked about and wrote an article about in September of 2017, which attracted a great deal of attention, is an article you wrote calling for China to engage with the United States in contingency planning for a potential crisis or instability in North Korea. Why do you think that is important, and why do you think the time is ripe, the time is good to do that?
Well, I think the time is ripe. Probably we're a little late also. Because the chance for outbreak of a crisis has dramatically increased because of the recent round of development of nuclear weapons on the part of the of North Korea. Okay. A crisis can break out, you know, for a number of reasons. One is a failed nuclear test. Okay. That could create a big havoc. And the second is you know, a sort of a preemptive strike on the part of the U.S. The third is U.N. sanctions, which have become tougher and tougher, you know, may make life in North Korea very difficult. Okay? And this may eventually become a cause of a crisis on the political side. And also, a crisis can be caused or triggered off by power struggle within North Korea. So all these scenarios, you know, have become more and more likely because of the development of nuclear weapons and missiles on the part of North Korea. So the chance for a crisis to break out has never been higher.
Mm-hmm.
Then the question is, if a crisis breaks out, are we prepared for that? I think we are not prepared for that. Of course, all of us, you know, the US, China, South Korea, maybe Japan and other countries, they all have their own contingency planning. Okay. The problem is they don't exchange ideas, at least not at the substantive level. Okay? then we have a problem. Okay? When the crisis breaks out, we haven't talked to each other very much at a reasonable good level. Then each of us would act according to our contingency plan. Okay? One of the items in the I think must be included in China's and the U.S. contingency plan. That is to take control of the nuclear weapons of facilities of North Korea.
Okay. May even be in the South Korea's plan.
May also be in South Korea's contingency plan.
Although we would hope the U.S. and South Korea would be lashed up.
Right. The problem is, you know, when each acts according to their contingency plan, they would bump into each other. Okay. And then they have to make quick decisions as to how to deal with the situation under the crisis situation. That's very dangerous. So to avoid an accident or unwanted military conflict, I think it's necessary for us to now to engage in dialogues on contingency plans as soon as possible, okay? Especially between China and the U.S. We're talking about controlling the nuclear facilities. Okay? I think both countries want to control the facilities, even though because they don't want the facility to be left in the hands of a disoriented military officer of North Korea, or to be controlled by other parties. The first one is very dangerous. The second one can lead to nuclear proliferation. So they should talk to each other as to who should control the nuclear facility of North Korea. I don't think they really care who controls between the two, because whoever controls it cannot gain very much. And at the same time, they have to, you know, it is quite costly for them to take care of the nuclear facilities. So this is one thing that they need to talk about. And there are many other things that we need to talk about, like how to quickly restore order in North Korea in a kind of a crisis situation. And also how to, you know, who should do the job? Okay? And what to do with the refugees? What kind of arrangement we should we should make, and also, you know, to reassure each other, and also plan longer. What should we do after the crisis with regard to the North Korea and probably even the peninsula? Okay? Whether we should have a new government in North Korea, and how we should put together a government in North Korea, according to what kind of principles, and who should do it, and that sort of thing. And maybe, you know, a unification issue, the South Koreans may be interested. So all these things we need to talk about.
You lay out a very reasonable and compelling case. It's a lot of common sense, and I think certainly I agree with you that it's important to do that. Are there opposing forces to these talks, these kind of talks in China, and what would their arguments be? It seems very reasonable to me, the case that you're making.
Of course, there are people who strongly disagree with me in China. First, they don't read the article. They just imagine. You know, they don't read it very carefully, or they misread it. They think that I'm urging China and U.S. to launch a joint attack against the North. So they think colluding with the enemy is something intolerable,
right.
Even for those who have read it. Okay. Carefully, they are worried that if China and and the U.S. work more closely, this will send a message to Pyongyang, we would make North Korea an enemy of China. And
just the fact of the kind of discussions taking place between the U.S. and China would somehow signify that China has abandoned North Korea, or somehow too aligned with the United States.
Right. So they are worried mm-hmm. that this would prompt North Korea to turn their ire against China. Okay. So they would argue that a friendly nuclear North Korea is better than unfriendly or hostile nuclear North Korea, as far as China's interests are concerned. Mm. So they don't want this to offend North Korea. Okay. So there are a lot of people like mm-hmm. this.
Obviously, the militaries would have to talk, because these kind of contingency operations would be carried out by militaries on both sides. Is this something the PLA would be willing to engage in, this kind of discussion, in your mind? Or is that one of the main groups that would oppose such discussions?
I'm not sure. I would assume that a lot of people in China, in the policy-making circle, would be supportive of this idea, because they realize how dangerous the situation can be, how dangerous if we don't talk to each other and bump into a crisis. But then it's a political decision.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think we already have some kind of
I was going to say, Secretary Tillerson had commented publicly that there's some of these kind of discussions that are already taking place. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was here in August of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently had some discussions. I don't know what extent. And it may have been the American side talking more than the Chinese side. The Chinese side may have been more in listening mode. But that's nevertheless, I think, a good start anyways. Because I would agree with you. And frankly, when I was in the Bush administration and we urged these kind of talks, and I think there was great resistance then. And I think, in large part to some of the things that you've written and talked about, I think the debate has shifted, and I think it's shifted in more positive ways, and hopefully we can engage more in this kind of discussion, because I think it's very important. I would agree with you. I want to thank you very much for your time.
Sure.
This issue, I think, over the year will continue, obviously, to develop, and we're going to have to stay, the United States and China, closely connected on this, and I hope I can come back and call on you again for your advice and insights and expertise.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor John. That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our site and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next time.